With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. My name is Marcus Speller.
My name is Jim Campbell.
I'm still Luke Moore.
And I'm Pete Donaldson. Haters.
Happy Monday, everybody. It's bloody lovely to have you with us. We are still here and we flipping well mean it. The sun is out and there's a glorious rambly song in all of our hearts, Luke, wouldn't you say?
I would say that, absolutely. And to celebrate such a momentous occasion, I have broken out a fresh pair of tracksuit bottoms because I know how to live.
Yeah. You flipping well do. You flipping well do. Jim, I wouldn't put you down as a tracksuit bottoms type of guy, and that's not to your detriment at all, or credit. It's just what I think.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right, Marcus. I own one pair. I basically never wear them. I feel I just wear what I normally wear outside around the house, which is stupid. Wear out the groins of my jeans a lot quicker for that reason, I'm sure. But I don't like feeling like I am kind of sitting about the house being slovenly because I am doing that. So I want to sort of trick my mind into thinking.
So
I'm
your clothes are like a fig leaf then, Jim, basically.
yeah, Pete wears tracksuit bottoms when he's on planes. Pete travels in tracksuit
Do
bottoms.
I?
Yeah. It's a good tactic. I'll do that.
I don't know if he does do that.
No, I don't think I do that. And to be quite frank, I don't own that many pairs of what I would deem masturbatory pants. So I will masturbate in any of my slacks.
I'm sure. Nobody would
clip that out. Come on,
nobody would disagree with you there. But just when we were doing the Ramble Live tour, especially in North America, you had those delightful dark green tracksuit bottoms on.
Oh, that is true. Yeah, I did flirt with a certain style that shall not be repeated. I started to look a little bit like the bloke from Aladdin. A bit baffling.
Yeah, you did, actually.
What,
yeah.
Jafar? Mm.
I think his name's Aladdin.
The magic carpet.
It might sound strange to anybody listening to think that Marcus would know Pete's wardrobe better than he does, but Marcus generally does notice if you're wearing something new. He seems to have this weird encyclopedic knowledge of all of our wardrobes, possibly because he doesn't drink. And if that's what happens, apparently you have some amazing memory.
Haircuts
I think
as well.
It's because, yeah, I think it's because he is the best footballer of all of us, and footballers, all of their banter is based around what car you drive or what clothes you wear. So I think that's why.
What gear or clobber?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, more on that later, by the way. I've got a great story in that area later on, so stick around for that.
very much look forward to that. I should clarify, as Pete hasn't done there, and I think it's quite poor of him, he suggests that I'm sort of making fun of, oh, we've got a new T-shirt, we should have stuck with the old one. That's not very much. I just notice and say, oh, I like it. That's all. Very innocent, very encouraging.
Yeah, to be fair to Marcus, can I be fair and unfair to you in the same sentence, Marcus?
I've no doubt you'll try.
It is slightly unsettling, but to be fair to you, it is always quite positive.
Yeah.
It's very innocent.
Yeah, agree.
It's always positive, but the situation is that he has to point out that he's not a bad man in case him upstairs is listening. So
like the opposite
I find
to you,
that
Pete.
More upsetting. I tell everyone that I'm awful all the time.
Yeah.
Well, you show rather than tell, don't you? Which is important.
But that's only when people catch you at the window. You go, look, I'm just an awful man. Forgive me. I'm off. See you later. There we are.
They don't even notice my pants.
Anyway, is there any football happening? No, there's not, is there? Carry on then.
What makes you think there isn't? Well, there was some breaking news on Friday afternoon. Breaking news on Friday afternoon.
3 days ago.
Yeah, and the breaking news was that the Premier League clubs hadn't decided on a date to conclude the Premier League.
Carry on, everyone. We've got some news. Yeah, the news is
still
that nothing's happening. Yeah.
Are they going to keep doing this? Like, it seems like every week they have a meeting to go, oh, we still don't know what's going to happen. Like, we've said it before ourselves on this show many a time. Like, no one knows what's going to happen because the situation's changing all the time. You can only make so many contingency plans. Are they just doing it for the sake of it at this point? And I that sounds more flippant than I mean it to. Are they just doing it because they have to be seen to be doing something, do you think?
I think what's happening is... as you've already said, Jim, it's a moving feast, right? So it's a pretty fluid situation. And what's also happening is that every sporting organisation, whether it be a vastly, hugely popular one like the Premier League or a slightly less popular one, that is all in hoc to what the governmental authorities want to do. And so whenever you have different associations around Europe talking about what they'd like to do, setting targets and looking to try and bring things back like training in small groups or the talk of games behind closed doors or whatever it may be, it's obviously because everyone wants answers to questions that can't be answered at the moment. So they're just trying to do their best. Ultimately, I think it's going to be at the mercy of whatever the government thinks. The Premier League can't just go outside of what is essentially going to be governmental advice about what they can do. So I guess they have a responsibility to keep meeting regularly and staying across things to see if anything changes and if there's any solutions that can be made. I think as a slight aside to that as well, I think we're going to be waiting a very, very long time to go to a stadium and watch a football match again. I think when it comes back, it'll be behind closed doors for quite a long time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Premier League, maybe they just miss each other, so they're just having little sort of meetings. But
they'll catch up.
Yeah,
imagine the catering, Marcus.
Well, I mean, they are meeting remotely, Jim. We should say. So,
yeah, that's just shame for them.
Yeah. So do spare a thought for those poor Premier League bosses. But Luke, when you say that they're sort of at the mercy of the government, of course they are ultimately, but they did say they'll only restart when the NHS gives them the thumbs up because they're that aware, as we all are, of course, of the situation and where the real front line is and where the real pressure is. So they will be very cautious, you would suspect, and I agree with you. I think we won't be able to enter football stadiums for a very long time. But the one thing that people did say, or the whistleblowers of these meetings did say, is that apparently they didn't discuss the option of making the season null and void. They are very, very keen to complete the season. There is an overall feeling it's not got to where it is north of the border, even though some clubs, not in the Premier League, but in the Football League, are saying, actually, that's maybe not a bad idea, because trying to play matches behind closed doors for a number of months or whatever it may be will cost us a lot of money. So we were having a bit of a laugh about what happened north of the border, as we should, because it's a shambles. However, the kind of idea and feeling of ending the season for some clubs who are in financial difficulty might not be terrible. But any restarting of the Premier League is going to be based on matches played with no fans attending. So the situation, as you say, Jim, is all over the place, and they're trying to scramble and get something, but very little is being firmed up, and because it can't.
Yeah, and I think, you know, let's get this absolutely right. I would be absolutely astonished if there isn't some kind of financial rescue package that's going to have to be administered to clubs lower down the football pyramid. I mean, if you look at some of the transfer fees that have been received for Championship players in recent years, in situations that clubs have used that money to try and keep themselves afloat and to do what they need to do to survive. And the average Championship club debt is obviously very, very high. It's measured in the millions upon millions of pounds. If there are no incomings and there's no product to sell, as I said a week or two ago, and the prospect of being able to sell players for high transfer fees for all sorts of reasons also disappears, then the situation looks very bleak indeed for the lower league club. So it's an absolute game changer. It's an unprecedented situation. Football's going to look very, very different when we come out the back of this. And while I understand that keeping the season going as much as possible, they want to complete it whatever the cost, essentially. I understand why that is, but if you look at what happened in Scotland about the prize money and the fact that clubs couldn't survive, I wonder whether we'll be talking about something completely different in 2 weeks' time, as we have been since this has happened. I mean, it feels like it's been happening for about 3 years because so much has happened. Yeah, it's not actually been that long. So the picture will probably look different again in a few weeks' time.
And also, if I think the government need to be a little clearer. Obviously, a lot has been said about Boris Johnson and the rest of his cabinet, how poorly they've managed the outbreak since like February. They need to be clear about what's probably going to happen in December, January, February of next year, because this will rear its head once again. If a vaccine is not found, there needs to be contingencies for that, a possible cancellation of the Euros, and this to go on and on and on. And so it is bigger than football. And I think the government need to be very, very clear and very, very realistic about what football clubs can actually do and how they can get built out.
Yeah, there's a really important point. The reason for that, I think, is the idea that we have to remind ourselves constantly. I had to do this on Friday on the radio. You have to understand people who exist in a football bubble and people like us who have to essentially a task with talking about football several times a week and not much else. You know, 15,000 people have died. It's a lot of people to have sadly lost their lives. A lot of families affected, a lot of things going on. And I understand why some people might find it a little bit inappropriate even that we're even talking about football coming back. I heard Lee Bowyer talk about it, saying that not a chance, he thought. There's no way it's coming back anytime soon. That was his opinion, obviously, as in his capacity as Charlton manager. But I suppose ultimately, the large parts of the economy as well, and jobs and stuff to stop further suffering, i.e. unemployment and all that kind of stuff, football is a big part of that for a lot of people as well. So it would be great if it could come back in some capacity at some point soon, but I understand there are bigger things at play here.
Yeah, well, as you said last time, Luke, when we were talking about Newcastle and the Saudis takeover, and you quite rightly said, you know, we have to talk about it, but also we are a football show, and so we're going to talk about if football's coming back or not, but in an appropriate manner and a sensitive manner, of course, because you have to be mad not to acknowledge the wider situation. The only date that's been mentioned in the press with regards to potentially sort of Premier League and whatnot coming back was the weekend of the 13th and the 14th of June, which is, of course, when England were meant to be playing Croatia in Euro 2020, which did make me go, oh, damn it all. But the best case scenario seems to be clubs starting training again in mid-May and resuming the season in mid-June, finishing at the end of July. Now, I think that's very fanciful, hence its best case scenario. The worst case scenario that's been mentioned anywhere is top flight football in England returning in round about October, which is a long way away. But of course, desperate times call for desperate measures. I mean, UEFA have written to domestic associations saying they'd bloody love it if everybody can finish their competitions by the 31st of July to leave August clear for the completion of the Champions League and the Europa League, ideally playing the Champions League final the 29th of August. But again, I just think that is so fanciful at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can understand why they're trying to give maybe a touch of hope, you know, in this situation.
They're in a weird position, aren't they? Because these contingency plans have to be sort of torn up and rewritten every couple of weeks, essentially. Because as Pete touched upon earlier, it could be the chance that there is a second wave in the winter and that we have to go into isolation again, even if we've come out of it. And of course, even the likelihood when we come out of isolation isn't that things will go straight back to normal. There's likely to still be sort of social distancing measures in place, even though they maybe won't be quite as extreme. So there has to be a contingency plan for the contingency plan becoming irrelevant with each one that's made. So it's a difficult one, especially without the catering.
Yeah. if you look at that, what you said there, Marcus, in context with what's happened in Germany, if UEFA say that, oh, you know, look, everyone can finish their competitions by the end of July, that'd be great. Well, Germany have already passed something down. The government have already passed something down saying that all public gatherings will be outlawed until the 31st of August. So what that essentially means then, best case scenario, there's going to be no fans attending any Bundesliga games for the rest of the season, essentially. If those two things coexist, then they can't exist with fans in the stadium.
And that is exactly what is going to happen, I would suggest. Yeah. But also, I think, I mean, the 29th of August, that Champions League final date hasn't moved since they moved it the first time. I know they said the end of August for that. I mean, that's in Istanbul, isn't it? Now, Turkey have a history and a record of massively underreporting their figures. I think it would be massive dereliction of duty for UEFA not to move that from that city, to be quite frank. Just the way that they've mashed their numbers up a little bit, that country, I would say.
Yeah, well, and Luke, you mentioned Germany there. They've put those measures in. Germany, comparatively speaking to other big European nations, going on statistics, have done a little bit better, if better is the right word, if you see what I mean. There's been far fewer deaths. And even they are being that stringent. As we keep saying, you know, we just...
All we can do, Marcus, is just report the latest, right? And exactly. It keeps changing and we have to keep reporting it.
Indeed. Yeah. What about... I quite like this bit of innovation from Danish club FC Midtjylland, who have come up with potentially an interesting way to try and get fans engaged somehow during matches, if indeed they come back and are played behind closed doors, which we all suspect they will be for the beginning, if nothing else. They're planning to show matches on large screens outside the stadium with people watching in their cars. Drive-in football.
Love it.
Yeah.
Won't work in London, but it could work there.
Well, it might take you a long time to get there in London.
Yeah.
40,000 people.
Everyone on the NPC.
Yeah. I love the idea of this. I imagine it being like a sort of secret cinema style thing where everyone has to kind of dress up. Like you dress up like it's a 1950s drive-in cinema.
And then Jim, you jump into the back seat of the car with Pete Donaldson.
Yeah. A little smooch. Safe? little lemonade float with Donnie in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Well, you guys, one of the things I found really interesting about drive-in cinemas, and all our American listeners over the age of 80 will roll their eyes at this, but I think I'm right in saying, and people can email in if I'm wrong, that when you used to drive to the drive-in cinema, you used to tune your radio to the frequency to get the sound in your car.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is amazing.
You could do. Some of them just had little posts that you would just put the speaker through your window, through your car window, and hang it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And Pete, how would you treat a lady or a man at a drive-in cinema? You get them a lemonade float and maybe a hot dog, or what's
lemonade
the what's
float,
the...
hot dog? Don't get it on the leather, love. Don't get it on the leather. That's a new car.
All the surfaces are wiped clean in your car, aren't they?
Do you know what I'm thinking, Jim? I'm thinking, how do we get here? Because Pete can't drive. So how the hell do we even find ourselves here? Is this your car, Mr. Dawson, or have you just jumped into it?
Look, I can work a radio. I'll turn on David Bowie's Driving Saturday and I'll just get going.
Love that. Love
so
it.
You're not even
Love
listening it. To the movie?
Yeah, exactly. I'm listening to some prime 70s boy.
I love the idea of there being a drive-in cinema and everyone's there getting into the movie with their popcorn and Pete's just shouting out the window, can everyone keep it down? I'm just trying to get a bit of peace and quiet in here. It's a good idea, though. I love that. I loved it. I read the article in the Telegraph. It was a great idea.
They always do things right up there.
Yeah, I read about it as well. And they think they can get like a decent amount of people there as well. It's like it's in the five-digit area. So... Actually,
that's
pretty
quite
cool.
A big area, Jim.
Indeed,
10,000 or 99,000.
Quite. I love the idea of somebody scoring a goal and you're just hearing loads of honks rather than a sort of cheer.
I can't believe that no one made a joke about Pete's five-digit area.
Well, yeah, I hate to think, quite frankly, Luke, but I'm happy to move on very swiftly before people get too disgusted and switch off their ramble radios. What I love about one of the stories that came out is, despite what's going on, Manchester City have obviously made a new signing.
I love it.
They've got a teenager from Peru, 16-year-old. I think it's pronounced Clivert. Clivert
Aguilar. It is, yeah.
Yeah, he'll be joining them next year after he turns 18 years old. He only made his professional debut 5 months ago, and I thought to myself, well, he's obviously a young, promising player, and he's got a lot of loan spells to look forward to, of course, when he joins Manchester City. But it's I find that remarkable, scouting networks. I know I'm going to sound a bit sort of, I don't know, ridiculous, but signing a lad, 16-year-old from Peru, who's hardly kicked a ball, he must be very, very good. But like I say, I don't think we'll ever see him in a Man City shirt, sadly.
It's fascinating for a number of reasons. One is, I can imagine the news being broken to him by his agent or whatever. So you can sign for Man City when you're 18. Don't worry, nothing's going to change. Well, how long for? About 5, 6, 7 years, I expect. You'll very much probably be quite far away from Man City for the foreseeable future. But no, joking aside, I've never seen him play because, you know, no one has. But there's obviously amazing scouting networks all over the world now, and things like Y Scout are amazing for that kind of thing. But the fascinating thing to me, and Donny, I'll bring you on this because this is your area. Like, as soon as I saw this in the running order, I just chucked the name Clivert Aguilar into YouTube, and there are already scores and scores of Welcome to Manchester City videos of Clivert Aguilar. Even though he's made 7 league appearances total in his whole career out in Peru, there's a 10-minute video, Welcome to Manchester City highlights in HD on YouTube already.
What is it? Can I ask about the soundtrack? Is it pumping house music or Evanescence's?
Bring Me to Life, isn't it?
Bring me to life.
It's always that. It's always that. Right, I haven't checked, mate, to be honest. But right. Yeah, it's. I can imagine there's quite a lot of padding in that 10 minutes.
loads of slow motion. Any star wipes or any fancy editing? Is there any kind of like earthquake shakes?
Lot of stills.
Lot of bloom. A lot of bloom on the footage, make it nice and green. Yeah. Is it all saturated and overdone, overwrought?
And at the end, there's just one Cruyff turn.
Look at his skills. Whenever you have like a skills package, and it's always like players like, I don't know, but like a really skillful player. All right, Hatem Ben Arfa is a pretty good example because he frequently used to do this and continues to do this. Just doing Cruyff turns, ripping the piss out of everyone, and then just it going out of play or going past into a player.
Yeah, because the way to edit it is so they edit it so precisely that if someone pulls off one of the subjects of these highlight videos pulls off a skill, they'll cut it straight away. For example, it'll be like the idea of someone nutmegging someone. You never really see whether the player got round the side and picked up the ball again because the nutmeg itself is what they're interested in. So they just cut it. And you can make a player like, as Joey Barton would say, they did it with Neymar.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. He hasn't got a lick of talent, that lad, has he? Yeah.
Whatever happened to him.
Well, more on Joey Barton later, by the way.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Well, let's have a bit of chat about Joey Hart because yesterday it was his birthday. Turned 33. Still fairly young, you know, well. He's not old for a goalkeeper, you know, obviously. He's
still had the same amount of people turn up to his party, probably.
Oh, come on.
Ooh.
That's no? harsh, isn't it?
You can't ever slag him because he played for England once. Is that right? That goes, Marcus?
What's this about his party?
I said he probably had the same amount of people turned up as he did usually.
Oh, right. I thought there was some sort of Toby Young style thing where he didn't have any mates or something.
Well, there is, just in my head.
All right.
Apparently, Derby County are interested in young Joe Hart. Obviously, his wages could be a problem. There's a bit of interest from Besiktas in Turkey. And I thought to myself, has Joe Hart not suffered enough? He needs a new challenge and get him teaming up again with Wayne Rooney. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting one. because it's a lot of it is dependent on whether Loris Karius goes back to Liverpool to replace Adrian, because obviously he's at Besiktas. But I completely forgot that Derby County have a player out on loan themselves who is a goalkeeper, which is Scott Carson at Man City.
Wow, I forgot that as well.
Completely forgot about that.
Wow,
that's the sort of thing I should be thinking about every moment of every day because it's so weird.
And there's nothing else to do.
And that, yeah.
It's. I mean, if he's weighing up like a move to Besiktas and Derby County. I mean, surely Derby County. I mean, Turkey invariably is a bit of a money move, but I mean, surely Derby County, they managed to afford Wayne Rooney for crying out loud through means. Surely they could push the ball out for young JH.
And they're subsequently the subject of quite a lot of investigations.
Up the Rams.
Up the Rams. Oh, dearie me. Speaking of Rams, Pete, let's talk about Faustino Asprilla.
I mean, you could have moved straight from Clive Aguilar, the YouTube footballer, to Faustino Asprilla, because he had a bit of that to him, didn't he?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. I suppose.
But he's gone with a very crass, speaking of Rams.
Rams!
Yeah. Well, I believe we mentioned on the pod previously that Tino Asprilla has said he would give away 1 million condoms from his own range to help with the global shortage during the pandemic. And he tweeted, I have a lot of condoms left in the company and I want people to help me use them because it's very difficult for me to use them all. I thought, well, give it a good, damn good go, won't you, Tino? But since then, Tino tweeted a photo of a drone saying that the Johnnies will be delivered by a fleet of drones. And we should say that Tino's face is on the box and he's kind of giving a kind of a slight, I don't know, how would you describe the facial expression?
Suggestive?
Yeah, it's as if he's in use of one of his own condoms, but his face is not on the actual condom itself, as far as I'm aware.
I mean, I would remove the condoms from the box and secrete them around my bedroom because Faustino Asprilla's face is the last one I want to see before beginning underwhelming sexual congress, quite frankly.
Yeah, congress, the thing is, though, yeah. Pete, speaking on behalf of someone who isn't you, if right. I was to walk into your bedroom and there were just individual condoms dotted about, placed everywhere,
like
I would
candles.
Fear the worst. And secondly... like really horrible candles. Secondly, I think Tino Asprilla is a classic example of a human being in a certain situation who has just got no one around him saying, sorry, mate, what are you talking about? What? Because, I mean, the condom thing, fine, I understand he runs a business or the rest of it. And, oh, I'm going to deliver him by drone. You, shut up. You're just making it up now. Stop it.
Yeah, it's to the point where it's hard to tell if he's serious or not, isn't it? Because it's Faustino Asprilla. He could be serious about the most ridiculous things possible. I'd love to get a delivery of anything via drone, especially condoms, though. Would you look cool to your neighbours or would you look ridiculous?
I think you'd look like you were trying way too hard.
Yeah, you're probably right. Which, to be fair, I am. So it's fine.
every time Tino's had a business, it always seems like one of those not 2 a.m. ideas with a close friend when
100%.
You've been up all night. It's a 4 a.m. kind of, and you know why he's up at 4 a.m. You know why he's still awake.
Absolutely.
You know why we all know why he's still awake at 4 a.m. So yeah. he's just having, yeah, let's do that. Let's start a band. Yeah. Yeah, buy a crane, rent it out.
But also,
yeah, cool.
He's one of those people, Pete, where he's a doer as well. So by the time he wakes up, he's already started the process, which is how these things end up actually happening.
Oh, yeah,
it's like when Dana White, the head of UFC, said he's going to carry on doing UFC fights on his own on a massive private island that he was going to rent. I'll just leave that there. I'm not making any suggestion. I'm just leaving that there. That's what he said he was going to do. That's all I'm saying.
Mate, and Vince McMahon are on the panel for Donald Trump. They've got his ear, how to get the sports economy back up and running. Wow. So
that's the first move that Donald Trump's ever made that I wholeheartedly support.
So, Pete, if we can just go quickly back to your leaving the condoms around thing, does this mean that they're littered in the back of your driving mobile?
Condoms in the back of my automobile. No, I blue tack them to the walls.
That is chilling. Absolutely chilling.
I once went to a lady's house a long, 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 long time ago, and she had a ball full of them, which made me feel real special.
Marcus, take us to a break.
Take us very much to a break. See you in a moment, everybody.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Luke, let's have a Patreon update, old sport.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Marcus. Yeah, patreon.com/footballrambledaily. Thank you very, very much to everyone who's contributed so far and who sends money every month, who's subscribed. We've hopefully recorded loads of extra content and provided you with loads of extra stuff to repay you for that. And those of you who don't want to sign up, absolutely fine. You'll still get 6 and in some cases 7 episodes a week absolutely free. The 7th last week, which came out yesterday, was our inaugural book club episode where Andy Brassel, Kate Mason and I reviewed Duncan Hamilton's Provided You Don't Kiss Me. So if you haven't heard that, well worth a listen. There was lots of fun to make and I think people have enjoyed it, so check that out. But if you can afford to chuck a bit of money our way every month for extra content, we'd very much appreciate it. Thank you very much to everyone who's done that so far. You can do so for as little as $5 a month. It's patreon.com/footballrambledaily for lots more extra content and helps us keep the lights on, keep ourselves keep Pete in condoms for in this difficult advertising market. So it's patreon.com/footballrambledaily.
Thanks. We love you all dearly. Right. And it's now time for emails with PTD.
Email show at footballrambledaily.com. And now Pete is reading it out. Well done.
It is time for emails with PTD. Actually, thinking about Faustino Spria, he used to rock around with a dinosaur suit, didn't he? I mean, he could donate those to the NHS or the NHS, whatever situation they have in his country, as kind of the protective wear, all of his
PPE.
Dinosaur suits.
Unless they are the condoms and they're just like full body ones.
They could be used as gloves. Anyway, rubber done. Robert Dunn has got in touch. Kevin Keegan and Barry Chuckle, Morning Ramblers. Yesterday, I was listening to some Ramble Meats while cooking dinner and finished them all. My word. I decided to listen to a random episode from the 4th of May, 2011, entitled Barry Chuckle. The show started off in great fashion with Pete questioning why Jim didn't show up to his 30th birthday. Why, Jim? Why? Why, Jim? Why?
Don't remember getting an invite.
Yeah.
You guys, well, I am approaching 40, so get involved. You guys are talking about Liverpool and saying how well recent arrival Luis Suarez was doing, and likewise, youngster Jay Spearing. Their careers have certainly taken different paths. Yeah. There was a little trip to Diego Corner, and then there was a profile, the one, the only, Mr. Kevin Keegan. Fantastic listening. Needless to say, to go along with the title, I had a good chuckle. Keep up the work. Keep up the great work. I removed great, so I didn't want to be self-congratulatory.
Just keep
so
up it the just work. Sounded a bit just weird. Do the work.
Keep the work. Keep the work. So I kind of, I try to temper that a little bit and admit it sounds really weird. Your pods are helping to keep some sort of structure to my week. Stay safe. Bob, thank you very much for your message. Bob, Jacob sent a message that started, the subject line says, the final solution to voiding the Premier League. Not reading that out. Sounds a bit extreme. Ben Vanderveld says, hello, lads. Outstanding work so far on unravelling the conundrum of how to talk about football when there's no football on. Getting in touch, as I am in the minority of Newcastle fans that are absolutely heartbroken by the prospect of my beloved football team being taken over by the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. Excuse me, and obviously edit like hell, I haven't, but I'm about to go off on one. After 30 years of joy, despair and everything in between, from Shearer's wallop against Everton, assisted by Shola Amiobi, he is omitted, to Joe Kinnear's press conferences, I cannot support my club anymore. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad Mike Ashley will be going. Fuck him and his spendthrift, heartless, brainless, soulless running and ruining of Newcastle United. I hope that every second step of his is onto upturned plugs and sharpened Lego. I wanted new owners, just not these ones. I completely understand the desire to rid ourselves of Ashley and compete at the top, but I have a very simple question for the Newcastle fans. Would Sir Bobby approve of this takeover? Would he work for this bunch? That man is the heart of what our football club is about, and I don't think he would. Because our new owners are murderers and monsters, make no mistake, they are the very worst of us, far worse than Ashley. Any football club can be unlucky to have an unsavoury, immoral owner, but when it's one individual or even a consortium, I can still get my head around supporting the team in spite of this, but we're about to be funded by the government of another country who are vile. They hate women, they hate gay people, dissent, protest, any alternative worldview, and they torture and murder the state in power. This regime, our new owners, administer public lashings and worse to rape victims as they blame them for adultery. How are the lads? I cannot be part of that. Friends and fans have said that they're able to separate the owner from the club, and because our own government is so morally bankrupt and welcome business with this regime, we as football fans are devoid of responsibility in how we react to this takeover, but I can't get my head around that. If a consortium of benevolent billionaires fronted by Jimmy Nail, Sting and Ant and Dec took over with a 51% stake for the fans and half of our profits going to charity, we'd crow about it endlessly. So we have to own it when our owners are at the other end of that moral spectrum. You don't have to support a football club however much you love them. It does go on. He says, of course, I'm a hypocrite. I drive a car fueled by petrol, and this email comes to you from a Huawei phone. But we all pick out hypocrisies, and this one is too far for me. This is the most bittersweet sporting experience of my life, and it hurts like hell. Yours now, looking for a charming and hilarious non-league club to support. Ben, get involved with Gateshead. I don't know. It was a long email, but I thought it was worth reading out. Thank you very much, Ben.
And just off the back of that, thank you very much for that. Just off the back of that, I should point out that tomorrow on Jules and Andy, I believe that the guys are going to be talking to Rob Harris from Associated Press about the latest with what's happening with that takeover. So hopefully we'll have some news for people on that front as well. But it's a difficult, really difficult situation. We've made our feelings clear on it on Friday, didn't we? So we probably don't have to go over, rehash that. But it's nice to hear from a fan, and I feel proud that we can give a platform to a proper fan who has their misgivings. And I think we were right to air that.
Yeah, there's a lot of press being slightly unrealistic, and there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of Newcastle fans not exactly covering themselves in glory or treating the subject with the gravity that I think it deserves, certainly on social media. But hey, social media, people shout a lot. If you'd like to get to the show, short footballrambledaily.com.
They could sign Kylian Mbappe, though. So, you never know.
There's the other side of the coin.
Indeed. That's not going to happen either. Thank you very much, Peter, for reading out those emails. Luke, what was this? Was there something about Ross Barkley and Trevor Sinclair?
I wanted to bring something to the table, which I thought was... Well, I've got a couple of quick stories that I think they're hilarious. So basically, the Chelsea official Twitter did a screenshot of Ross Barkley's Strava about him running a 5-kilometre run in just over 16 minutes, which, for those who aren't you know, into that kind of stuff. And bear in mind, I try to be into that kind of stuff, but I'm not. That's very, very fast indeed. I mean, that's a very fast time. It's very, very impressive. Until sometimes you get the hero you need and not the hero you want. But Detective Joey Barton got on the case, had a little look into the Stravas in question, and pointed out that if you look at the elapsed time of the run, and rather than just the recorded running time, it looks as if, and I'm not casting any aspersions on Ross Barkley's character at all, but it looks as if what's been happening there is that he's been sprinting really fast, stopping it, having a rest, sprinting really fast again, stopping it, having a rest to get the fastest time possible. Now, I understand that he might have just been doing a shuttle run thing and maybe the club's Twitter have picked up on it and put the wrong message out there, but I just thought it was hilarious that Joey Barton took it up as a cause celebre among everything that's going on. So, no, this is the fucking story we need. That is a disgrace. And then he went and did it with Trevor Sinclair as well. Poor old Trevor. He's retired now.
Leave Trevor alone. We need some sort of, you know, ITV drama on this. I'd fancy Michael Sheen to play Ross Barkley. You know, this is what we need.
So go and check out Joey. I mean, not often I'll say this, but go and check out Joey Barton's Twitter account for more Strava-based investigations. And the second thing I wanted to put to that got my attention today is that the BBC do this thing called Bite Size. It's like an educational tool for children, and they've launched a thing called Bite Size Daily, where every day you have a little lesson in a certain subject taught by a famous person, right? So, for example, the science one this week, I believe, is being done by Professor Brian Cox, okay? I know Pete doesn't like him. Pete doesn't like his face, but we accept that he is a public intellectual, a very popular one.
I don't like his lips. You know,
the natural world one is being done by David Attenborough, right? Cool. That's all well and good. Great. Here's where it gets a little bit interesting. This week, I believe the Spanish lesson is being done by Sergio Aguero.
Yep. Oh, come on.
You like that?
And yeah, it's better though, isn't it?
That's just building up to the main event. Guess who's doing history?
I already know this.
It's Danny Dyer.
It is Danny Dyer. Bear in mind, though, Danny Dyer is a direct descendant of Edward II and Thomas Cromwell, isn't he? As we saw in the greatest hour of TV ever.
I think that's why he might be doing it. Either that or he's just doing the history of the craze.
Yeah. is Aguero Spanish going to be different to Spanish?
Ask Marcus.
Ask Joey Barton, he'll get to the bottom of it.
You just need to be clear, that's all. South American Spanish.
He does speak Spanish, so that's
yeah, but like but I'm saying that the way that there's no fuzz in South American Spanish, is there?
Not in all Spanish, though, as well. There's a bit of a misnomer. Mm.
Pete, kids can't go to school at the moment. I don't think their parents, who are probably completely strung out, are going to be worried about the specific type of Spanish that's being taught. They just want to be able to have a cup of tea and put their feet up for half an hour with Sergio Aguero's handsome face.
Exactly.
Saying, ¿Dónde está la playa?
Yeah.
Dereliction. Lo sientos, everyone.
Yeah.
There we go.
And Steve McLaren's doing the Dutch lesson next week.
Did you guys see what happened with that Leeds fan? Leeds have got a player called Ben White on loan from Brighton at the moment, and a 5-year-old Leeds fan wrote to Brighton asking them if he could contribute his pocket money to make it permanent. It was something like £15.07, which is just adorable, isn't it?
Which well, the kid hasn't got a clue. Price.
He hasn't, to be honest.
Yeah. Kids living in a dream world.
He's got some harsh lessons to learn about the real world.
Pete, did you say Dennis Wise?
Yeah, he's like Dennis Wise helping Mike Ashley with the purchases of Nacho Gonzalez. Oh, thanks.
Oh, can you help us broker this deal? Well, I can give you £15. All right, yeah, we'll take it.
And he would take it, Ashley.
Yeah.
Oh, dearie me. Dearie me. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for Pete's Film Club.
Pete's Film Club.
It's time for the Film Club. I hope you've all done your revision, because this week was quite a good one. The film in question was The Arsenal Stadium Mystery from 1939 during a charity soccer match between top professional side Arsenal, never heard of them, and touring amateur side Trojans. The Trojans' new star player collapses. When he dies, Inspector Slade of Scotland Yard is called in and declares it a murder. It takes all his ingenuity and another death before the motive is discovered and the killer is revealed.
Look, look, what's the matter with Doyce?
By Jove, he does look bad.
Doyce has just collapsed like a log. It must be some sort of a faint or something. I didn't see him get hit.
Inga, he's dead.
Leslie, yes, this is Inspector Slade.
How do you do?
How do you do? Now, did any of you see Doyce eat or drink anything at halftime?
Well, he took a slice of lemon, but then so did most of the other boys.
Yes, of course.
What about the parcel?
Yes, that's right. He got a parcel at halftime.
A parcel?
Well played, old man. What's happened to your head?
Huh?
It's as black as ink.
Oh, good man, Clinton. I knew you could do it. Well, of course it was Rail. He was Mary Kindley's fiancé. He killed Doyce for driving Mary Kindley to suicide. And he killed Gwen Lee to stop her from talking.
The Arsenal Stadium Mystery. Did you enjoy it?
I certainly did, Peter.
It was good, wasn't it?
I think this is the best film that we've done.
Yeah, I think I can't remember. There's some famous directors who are big fans of this one. I might have mentioned them last week. Yeah. But I think in many ways, watching these, this is the sort of film I see my dad watching. It's like an old dad's channel on Sky, really high in the 700s, and they just play films from this era, and he just watches them over and over again, and then he'll send me links to them when he's, you know, up at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I do like old films that just, they just race through all of the dialogue, shout their lines, and then the film is over in an hour and 20. Done. Finished.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, I actually quite enjoyed this. There's a great TV channel called Talking Picks TV, which I believe is free. I think it's free to air. And it just shows endless British black and white movies. I've never quite seen the Arsenal Stadium Mystery on there, but it very much reminded me of the type of movie they show on there. It was really, really enjoyable, chiefly because it was so revealing. I know this sounds like an obvious thing to say, but it's so revealing just how different, not just football, but the world was that long ago. And I actually have to say that this might say more about my deductive skills, which is apt because it's a mystery movie, than anything else. But I had to found that to really concentrate to follow what was happening for a couple of reasons. One, because every single person in it looks the same, right? Two, they all dress the same. And three, they've all got the same haircut, right? Yeah, so it's very difficult to work out what's going on. I'll throw to you next, Marcus, but I found it very tough at the start to work out who was actually a professional actor and who was the footballers that are actually in it as footballers, because everything just seems so alien compared to modern movies.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. In the spirit of what Pete was saying when they sort of rattled through it, what I love about these types of films from yesteryear, and I think Dial M for Murder, which is quite a famous one, might end in a similar fashion. I won't give away the ending. But when the killer, when it sort of concludes, it finishes so abruptly. Like it's kind of, right, job done, see you, bye.
You don't even get to see the guy arrested, do you?
No, exactly. Like it is wrapped up in a neat little package, to quote Homer Simpson. And there's no kind of, oh, and they lived happily ever after, or this person went on to do them, or you see them all relax into whatever came after that. It's kind of like, no, we're here for this. You've got it. That's enough. And that was quite good. But there was some lovely lines in it. I can't remember any sort of specifically off the top of my head, but I thought the football scenes weren't too bad.
Yeah, it was a match between Arsenal and Brentford. Brentford played the role of the Trojans at the time, but none of them died.
make that absolutely clear. Yeah, I mean, Jim, what did you think of it? Because I think it's the best film we've seen out of the fine selection we've been given so far.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And actually, further to the point that Pete just made about the football being a game between Arsenal and Brentford, it was actually a league match. It was the final league match of the 1939 season, and therefore the final league match before the outbreak of the Second World War. So the reason that the Trojans wore white kits was because Brentford wore white kits. So I thought, like, some of the footage of the football did look genuinely decent and, like, even by modern standards, and I was quite surprised by it. So it did make sense to see it was an actual competitive game with something riding on it. And just Luke's right as well. It's so weird to see so many sort of posh men with pipes in football. And George Alisson, the Arsenal manager at the time, has quite a big role in it, and he speaks a lot, and everything is so clear.
That
it's he is quite good, but it's all very, very posh and all just very RP. And by Jove, there's a lot of enjoyable old timey speak in that effect. And as you know, like, I'm well into that. It reminded me a lot of Mr. Cholmondeley Warner from Harry Enfield, because it was all so similar. And there's a bit I loved where Cliff Bastin is described as the boy wonder, and he looks about 300 years old. People have changed so much
on that front, like with the the dialogue and the way that people carry themselves. It is really funny. It's like really charming. But when you first get introduced to the detective, who is easy to spot and easy to follow from the start, because he's quite eccentric, right? And he wears all these different types of hats and stuff. And when he first hears about the case, someone says to him something like, "Oh, there's been a mystery or whatever. It's a football match." And he looks into the sort of distance. He goes, "Football? Outdoor fellas with shorts on." When he's in the dressing room and his like hapless assistant is asking him what he's going to do, are you going to look for clues? And then the detective says, "No, I wait for the clues to come to me." And I thought, that's not ideal for a detective, is it? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, someone's job must be quite proactive.
He got the job done, though.
I like that when they're sort of running down the team and the BBC announcer is going, "Bremner, born with a silver football in his mouth."
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah, that was a lovely line.
And if this film has taught us nothing else, if your girlfriend is quite annoyed, you say, "I do believe you're quite annoyed." Then you kiss them full on the mouth and tell them you're going to have sex later.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Pete. He says he's in the back of the car with her, the guy who gets murdered, and he goes... He says, "Oh, we are annoyed, aren't we? Well, we'll soon settle that." And then he just leans in and gets off with her.
It's like... Yeah, and it's just... it's a very aggressive kiss as well. Like old-timey movies, kissing seemed to be a very aggressive thing. Like you would effectively just press your face onto someone else's, like it was a window you're blowing a raspberry onto. Very, very strange.
We're back to Pete's bedroom again, aren't we?
Pete's car that apparently has walls. With condoms blue tacked onto them.
But the plot like kind of comes to a point where when a player is... there's two situations where a player is sparked out. One of them just knocked out on the field, and the ref comes over with a sponge and puts it on his head and gives him some smelling salts, and he's back up and running. He shouldn't be doing that. He's literally sparked out. And then when Doyce, the player who actually... The pound shop Paul Newman who dies, he's literally dead. His heart's not going. And the doctor in the medical room goes, "I don't like the look of this at all." Yeah, the bloke's dead.
That's so good.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Good. I have to say as well, it's so ridiculous and pathetic, but when Arsenal scored, I was genuinely happy. To me, it was like actual Arsenal had scored a goal. And I, you know what? There was supposed to be a sequel to this movie, but the bloody Second World War got in the way, and it was going to be set on the... it was going to be about a film being made and something happening on during the production of it. And you can see that it was intended to be a long-running thing, because the guy that played the detective, who was also a theatre director... In the plot, just to make him a little bit more eccentric, it had the feel of the intention for this to be an ongoing thing, because it almost felt like an episode of something rather than a movie itself. And I think it's worthy of a remake. You know, if there's ever going to be some sort of Premier League streaming platform, they're going to need content outside of football. So some sort of Midsummer Murders style thing where, you know, murders happen all the time at Premier League grounds, I'd be into it.
I really enjoyed the detective. I thought he was great. I thought he was really watchable, and every time he was on the screen, you're like, okay, this is going to be fun. And I looked him up, the actor. I forget his name, but he made his name doing playing quite a lot of sinister, dark roles. Actually, I think as far as I can make out, that role in the Arsenal Stadium mystery was a bit of a departure for him. But I thought he played it really well. He was by far the standout character in it. But the one thing that really disappointed me about the movie is that Robbie, DT, and Troops weren't in it at any point.
I don't know. There was a guy in the front row giving a lot of old timey banter to the referee.
There was.
Who's great. You know, he's the equivalent, effectively.
Do you remember?
Hey, Raf, don't keep blowing your whistle. Blow your nose.
Yeah, that's it. That's the line.
Finger out,
got me.
Finger out. Give me money. Give me money.
So weird.
Blow your nose.
Anyway, overall, it was a good movie.
It was, it was excellent. Really, really, really enjoyable. And great to see the celebrated actor Greta Gint, who was Norwegian. Huge star in England, tried to move to Hollywood in her 40s and was laughed out of town. Because that's how Hollywood works. So
and that's how it'll work for us in a few years' time.
Do you want to hear what you've got for next Monday, lads?
Oh, God. No. Can I say no?
Sort of.
Can I say no to this?
Well, it was actually a suggestion from a guy called Tim Holland who'd forwarded on, I think, an animated GIF of this film. And once I saw, I think, a Haitian international doing a very weird football goal, I thought, we have to cover this film. It's a film from 1987 called Hot Shot. A rich soccer player in New York packs up his upper-class life and heads for Brazil to find Pelé, the greatest footballer who ever lived, who is now a farmer. It's basically just Karate Kid with Pelé. It's brilliant.
Oh, wow.
No, I'm in. I'm in.
Yeah. Same, yeah.
You should have just said that at the start.
Yeah.
and it's on Amazon Prime, so no excuses, everyone.
Great.
Oh, great.
Beautiful. Well, nice one, Petey. I'm genuinely looking forward to that one as well. Maybe we've got in our groove, although we shouldn't say that because Pete will then sort of come in with some sort of Soccer Dog 3 punishment or something like that.
Yeah, Marcus, on that note as well, I have never, since the start of this film club, I have never paid so much attention to the runtime of movies. And like, if it's like one, like the one, like the Arsenal Stadium mystery was like 1 hour 20, I was like, that is absolutely perfect. Lovely.
Yep.
Cheers.
Yeah, and it was good, whereas Playing for Keeps was nearly 2 hours, wasn't it? And you think, come on, you've got our priorities wrong these days. But Gerard Butler has got his priorities in the correct order. So in that film.
Yeah, I've just checked the runtime of Hot Shot, and it's 94 minutes. Not too bad.
Ideal.
Okay. Yeah, there we are. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Right, thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble on Football Ramble Daily. Jules and Andy are back tomorrow. As Luke's already said, there should be another brilliant show from those two lovely people. And until then, say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Petey.
Bye-bye.
And it's goodbye from me, you lovely lot.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I'm
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.